Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I have to say this is a first for folk on foot. We're in the Highlands of Scotland and it's thick with snow and it's beautiful, a white coating over the hills and mountains and hanging off the trees as well. And it's bitterly, bitterly cold, -1, I think, at the moment. Pools of ice have formed on the track. And we're here to meet a wonderful singer who lives in the Highlands. Today's Folk on Foot guest is the Gaelic singer Julie Fowlis. She's made it her mission to bring Gaelic song and poetry to a wider audience. She was born and brought up in a Gaelic-speaking community on the island of North Uist off the west coast of Scotland, but she now lives here near to Loch Ness, and that's where we'll be meeting her today. She's won Radio 2 Folk Awards, she counts Ed Sheeran amongst her fans, and she reached an enormous audience when she recorded songs for the soundtrack of the Disney Pixar film Brave. But today, she and her husband and musical collaborator Eamon Dorley are going to take us for a walk on the snow-covered shores of Loch Ness. Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
Amen. Hello. Hello, there you are. Look at this. This is absolutely spectacular. We're at the end of Loch Ness. There is snow on the mountains and there's a little bit of mist hovering over the surface of this really still water.
It's really still. It's beautiful this morning.
Is this a favourite place of yours?
It really is, and it never gets any less inspiring, really. The more I come to it, the more you find here, whether that's history or peace or just a little bit of stillness.
Can we walk round the shore a bit?
Of course, let's go.
Okay. So is there musical inspiration in this landscape for you as well?
Absolutely. And I think, I guess this is now our family home, you know, and since I personally made the decision to be here and make music here, a lot of my early influences, of course, are from the Hebrides and from North Uist in particular, where I was raised until I was a teenager. And when I started playing music professionally, I was always going back to the well, as it were, and, you know, to old friends and teachers, mentors, people who were always so generous and sharing with songs. And that was always my go-to. And I did a programme for radio a few years ago, and it was during the process of recording that programme that I realised, it just struck me very suddenly, very powerfully actually, that I was raising my family in this area where I don't feel the same deep roots as I did in the Hebrides. When I go home to the islands, just I hadn't even realised it, but when I get off the ferry and I start either walking or cycling or driving around the island, I can see songs in the landscape. I can see poetry. I can see where the poets and the bards used to live. I know the stories. I can see all the place names. They all make sense to me. And the landscape is almost lit up. It's almost like in stereo sound, and it's just completely alive to me. And this landscape here, which I love so much and I feel very much part of, I realised I didn't have that here. And I felt a profound sense of almost loss or something, realising that I didn't have that. And therefore, I couldn't pass that on to my kids. So I made it kind of a mission that I would learn as much as I could. I would try and connect with this landscape in the same way that I feel so deeply connected to my island home.
And so how do you set about doing that?
Well, I guess in some ways it's a little more challenging because the Gaelic here from this area has all but gone. And most of the Gaelic speakers that you meet here and engage with here are usually islanders or West Coasters.
People who've moved here.
So you have to search a little bit harder. It's a bit easier to find your way into these things in somewhere like Uist, where Gaelic is still on an equal par, you know, in terms of spoken language, it's on an equal par with English. Here it's very different. Gaelic definitely is a minority language in this area, despite it being the capital of the Highlands. And it involves a little bit more of a search, but that makes it exciting and challenging, and it's what I love doing, rooting about in old books and finding these stories. And it helps me personally make sense of where I live, and I love being able to share that with the kids when I can.
So did you speak Gaelic as a child?
No, not so much. I was kind of that generation where we'd be spoken to quite a lot in Gaelic and we'd be guilty of answering in English, and maybe, I wouldn't say lazy, but all I know is I had to work very hard as a teenager to kind of claw that language that was in my head and in my heart and in my being. I had to work really hard to be confident enough to use it and speak it.
And what took you back to it? When was the decision to go and study it?
I guess, funnily enough, leaving Uist was the key for me. And it's only when you leave a place that you maybe see, recognise what you've left behind. Yeah, so I did have to work quite hard, but at the same time, it's part of my family, it's part of who I am. And now it's my children's, their first language. They have Irish as well. They're kind of like sister languages anyway, but
so Eamon speaks Irish to them.
Yeah, and unfortunately they're similar enough to be sister languages, but different enough to be intensely annoying, because you think you have a grasp on it and then you don't.
And can you explain to us why you think it's so important that this language lives and breathes and survives?
Well, it's a connection to our past. It helps you understand where you live. It helps us understand the very land that we're walking upon right now. All the hill names, they're all in Gaelic. or something. There's a Norse influence there too, of course, but they tell stories. If you can understand the naming of the landscape around you, it gives you so much. You feel connected to it. You don't have to be from here to feel the connection of what went before. There's always lessons to be learned.
Do you have a song that you think of when you think of this area?
Well, this song that I'll sing for you now is one that I actually heard in North Uist for the first time. But actually, this version I came across in an old manuscript, and the story around the song is said to have taken place just on the other side of the hill that you can see here, on the south side of the loch. And it's called Eynatjan Katalitjith.
There's a great spot just across this stream here. I wonder if we could just walk over the stream and stop there to sing the song.
Let's do that. Okay. Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Chanielski anio bita gagat, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Skarav dogusko gansevatin, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Chanielski anio bita gagat, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Kuto avastei von jepi, Jerun garsten rak setraun. Eynatjan Katalitjith, Eynatjan Katalitjith, Chanielski anio bita gagat, Eynatjan Katalitjith.
Julie, that was wonderful. You've also charmed some ducks who've arrived at the edge of the loch here to enjoy the singing.
I've sung to the seals plenty of times before, but not for the ducks so much.
Tell us about the story behind that song.
Well, I'd first heard a version of that song in Binbecula from a great piper and singer called Catriona Garbutt, but I came across these words in some old papers that was published by the Gaelic Society of Inverness, and it was attributed to a man called Ocean Fraser from Foyers.
Which is just along the loch here.
It's just along the loch here. And there's a version of a tale which talks of this Ocean going to France. It says he's spending the night in a lovely inn and he hears a nurse sing a child to sleep. But within the croon, within her lullaby, she inserts these verses of warning. And he's roused to a sense of danger and he cuts the blankets, makes a rope, and he and the songstress escape out of the window. And the story goes that he takes her all the way back from France to Strathedic outside Inverness.
Do you have a translation to give us a sense of the poetry for those who don't speak Gaelic?
Yeah, essentially, so the word "ei," it can either mean a guest in Gaelic, or it's also the vocative form of the name "ei," which is an old name for an old Gaelic word for Hugh, the name Hugh. So "ei" or "Hugh" or "guest," don't sleep at all, don't sleep deeply. You don't have a knife or a dagger, so don't sleep. You'll awake to terror, and look under your bed, you'll find a stiff, heavy arm waiting for you.
It's a stiff, heavy arm is That's the scary bit, isn't it?
Yeah. It's funny. There's the word garshin, which is your arms is your garshin, and but in some versions it's gershin, which is almost like something terrifying, like a monster or something.
A monster. Yeah. Under the bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are we going to travel around the edge of the loch now towards Foyers?
We are. Let's go to Foyers. There's a beautiful, beautiful falls there. Beautiful Is, as we say in Gaelic. So let's head to the falls of Foyers.
Right, on we go. You did a great job with the ducks there, Eamon. We think you're a duck whisperer.
It's kind of a good name for a tune, though.
Oh, yes.
The Canny Canard.
Oh, the Canny Canard. Yes,
that'd be good.
That's great. Uh-huh. So this is actually the first edition of Folk on Foot to have thick snow. Good. Well, to have any snow, good, frankly. And we're right in it now, aren't we? There's snow lying and it looks absolutely beautiful in amongst the trees here on the left. And we're going to walk down now to the falls. Yes. So it could be quite slippy there, couldn't it?
Yes, well, hang on.
Okay. And you've got the bouzouki out, Eamon.
I have the bouzouki.
That is good news. That means there's going to be music down by the falls. Let's not drop the bouzouki down as we climb down.
Some people would be happy right there.
Now, Julie, I'm getting the impression that you're something of a keep fit fanatic.
Well, I guess the loch holds lots of appeal for me. The last few years I've spent a lot of time cycling around it. So it's,
is there an actual race?
There is. We have an event up here called the Etape Loch Ness. It's just over 100 kilometres around. It's an amazing opportunity to cycle around the loch safely because they close the roads. There's never that much time to take in the views, mind you. But
how long does it take you?
Just over 4 hours.
Right.
To get round.
And you have to go fast, presumably.
You go as fast as you can. You're slowed down immensely by an amazingly beautiful but very steep hill, which goes on for about 10 kilometres. So it's lovely to cycle around, and when you've spent time, you know, researching songs and stories and things, you begin to hear them in the landscape as you're going round. So the challenge this year is to row the loch.
You're going to row?
That's my challenge, yeah.
From one end to the other?
From one end to the other. It's about 24 miles.
How often do you go out rowing?
Oh, no, not enough, unfortunately. When you're away touring so much, it's really difficult to keep all these things up. But yeah, whenever I'm at home, I'm out as often as I can. There's something so magical about just getting out into the water and just leaving the phone behind and leaving all that to one side.
We can hear the falls now, can't we?
Yeah, they're a little bit distant, but if you just listen, you'll be able to hear them.
And the snow's cleared a bit here, so it's slightly easier underfoot.
You can see the loch in the distance as well.
Eamon, do the falls have a name in Gaelic?
As na smuid, or smuid, we'd say in Irish, but smuid in Gaelic, I believe. And it literally means as is the Gaelic word for falls, waterfalls, and or spring even. And smuid, the smoke, you'll see when you come down that there'll be spray. And today the spray will be very obvious because it'll have covered everything, and everything will have this frozen, like almost freezing rain. The winter wonderland down there, it's gorgeous.
I can't wait to see it.
So the lullaby, Aoinagin Catalicus, was attributed to this Hugh Ugin Fraser from Foyers. Ugin Frangach, as he was known, French Hugh. We're very lucky that a lot of local history was documented in things like the Transactions of the Gaelic Society of Inverness. I guess one of the most inspiring things for me, or certainly a catalyst for learning, was a project I worked on with two friends of mine who live in this area. We had tiny children, all of us at the time, and we were all kind of juggling babies and work, and I guess we were all craving some sort of creative outlet. And we worked on a kind of cultural mapping project. So the idea of remapping a place, not only with place names, but putting stories and song on the map, like literally on the map, and then sharing that. That was a real catalyst for me.
It's fascinating that you could actually put a song in a specific place or a story in a specific place,
yeah.
Presumably because of the person who told it or the family through which it was
yes.
handed down.
So either by the composer or the singer who, you know, the kind of this as far back as a source we can go. So they were placed in that way by either composer or the singer or where we learned the song or where the, if there's a geographical link, of course, to the song. Again, it all helps you make sense of the place around you.
So you've got the map with you?
I did. I actually took the map with me just to show you. So this was focused on Strathnairn and neighbouring Straths, which is the south side of the loch. I live on the north side of the loch. Yeah, you can see the Oinagin Cathal there. It's marked number 4.
Mm-hmm.
So we're here.
Okay, yeah, just at the top of the map.
Yeah.
And then
I guess the connection to Foyers is through Hugh Frangach, Ushin Frangach. And this is the loch. And this is the
running
loch.
Along the
and
top,
looking,
yeah.
This is us looking on the south side, the Straths on the south side of Loch Ness.
And then you've put in the places here. The numbers refer to stories and songs.
And songs, yeah.
In different colours.
Yes.
I mean, what's amazing to me to see this is my inspiration for doing this podcast was the sense of place that folk music has. And you have personified it here for us. You've shown us that literally on the map we can see the cultural heritage and the songs and
yeah.
stories. And that's a wonderful thing to see.
Isn't it an interesting way of looking at a place?
Yes.
Looking at a map.
Looking at a place through its stories and through its songs.
Yeah.
And navigating almost by
that's
them.
That's exactly it. It just, yeah, it's just another level of depth and knowledge that roots you to a place. Even if you're not from a place, it's allows you to feel a deeper connection with it. You know, it's just so interesting.
It's a brilliant artifact. Thank you for bringing it with you.
Yeah.
Now, Eamon's got out an instrument. Eamon's got out his bouzouki.
He has.
So would you play and sing for us? What are you going to sing now?
Well, we might maybe sing something that's a little bit that we've been singing for a little while. And actually, might have this been the first song we ever played together? So long ago, I can't remember.
He's not looking particularly romantic, is he? You know? Yeah, well, maybe.
Sunny and Cher moment. Isn't
it? You bet you've never sung here before.
I don't know. I have never sung here. Before.
No, no. So thank you for encouraging us.
Yeah. Let's hope the bouzouki reacts well to the temperatures.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's never in tune anyway, so it's not going to change anything.
So what are you going to sing?
What are we singing? Jokshan Life Madu, which means this drink would be in the hand of my love. And this song goes back, 500 years anyway. And it's one that, again, I learned from Catriona Garbutt in Benbecula. And it's one, I actually think it's maybe one of the first ones we ever sang together, which is a good number of years ago now. Can't even work out how many. But yeah, we'll give it a go.
Yeah.
Jo
So one of the things, listening to that song,
yeah,
that occurs to me is that Gaelic is a musical language.
Yes.
I mean, it feels that obviously I don't understand it, but I feel it,
yeah,
when you're singing. Is that what your observation too?
I think so. That's what I feel, certainly. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Morning.
Thank you.
Morning.
Hiya.
I think there's a great truth and honesty in these songs. It's storytelling, isn't it? And
but there's a musicality to the language. Like Italian somehow is a language that is great to sing in. You know, when you hear opera sung in Italian, it somehow works like that.
Yeah, there's some the rhythms in Gaelic singing. Always the rhythms of the words take precedence. That's the kind of the general rule, and the music is considered almost secondary, but actually by doing that, it becomes very musical, by letting the words lead the storytelling. It's not the...
Which way should we go? Should we do the upper viewpoint?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really icy, guys. Keep a hand out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
No, I'm kind of okay. Whoop. It is very slidey. It's all packed. Oh, the view is worth it, I promise.
Oh, wow. Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah, you can learn. You can...
It's good enough for your hand down. This is quite spectacular, Julie, because we can see the falls cascading white water right down the rock face here.
Yeah, and it's freezing, of course, as it's the last few days, certainly the temperatures have been so cold.
The sheet ice underfoot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite tricky getting down the hill here.
I didn't realise you had an issue with heights. This it's
not great for my vertigo, but you know, there you go. I had to swim in the Brockwell Lido with Kerry Andrew,
listen,
and now you take me up here to look down this huge drop.
We're testing you.
But it's absolutely worth it because it's a beautiful spot, isn't it?
It's really incredible, yeah.
And the sound is wonderful, that roaring sound of the power of the water coming down.
It is. And it feeds into the loch, and there's just that very simple idea, but it's lovely, the thought of all that water up on the hills there coming down through the waterfall and feeding into the Ness. And Loch Ness is part of this amazing construction, Thomas Telford's Caledonian Canal, which effectively cuts off the North Highlands from the rest of Scotland. So there's a waterway from Inverness in the north right the way down to the southwest to Fort William. And yeah, so water for us here, all these water features, they're part of our daily life, really, you know.
Well, let's climb back up the hill if we can across the ice.
It might involve a bit of skating.
We may have to rope ourselves together to get over the ice and go back up the hill. And somebody's very conveniently into the rock here carved a verse which goes, "Still through the gap the struggling river toils, and still below the horrid cauldron boils." And that's what it's like when you look over the edge and see the water steaming up from the bottom. So we're climbing back up.
Yes.
I should have known as we were coming down that this would involve going back up again, wouldn't it? We're climbing back up this extraordinary staircase up the hill away from the fall, with rocks and tree roots underfoot.
I will bring you for a cup of coffee soon.
Oh,
I
good.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
But
should we just pause here for a second, Julie, because I want to ask you about a project that I know has been a big part of your life for the last year, which is the Isle Eyre project, which is for an anniversary related to the First World War. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, the Isle Eyre, or it's a Gaelic word, Eolida, which is a Gaelic word for eagle. But the Isle Eyre, which is...
That's the way I pronounce it, which is really bad.
No. And that was how it's generally described. The Isle Eyre was a yacht which was taking servicemen home on the 31st of December 1918, after the war, and it left Kyle at 7:30. She was due into the port of Stornoway in the Isle of Lewis in the early hours of the 1st of January. And due to navigational error and worsening weather conditions, the ship struck the rocks known as Biastan Hulam, the beasts of home at Hulam, and she eventually sank shortly after with the loss of 201 lives of the 280 of men that were on board. It was the biggest loss of life around British shores in recent history, and it's the single incident which has the biggest impact on the Hebrides for hundreds of years, and the loss of those 201 men are felt so keenly even today, over 100 years later. Myself and great friend and colleague musician Duncan Chisholm, we were tasked with putting together a commemorative piece, which, as you can imagine, was pretty challenging. It's hard to describe the effect that it had on the island. As someone said, it was like the strength of the island had been taken away in one night, like a black cloak had been put over the island. There were over 300 children orphaned by the Isle Eyre. There were pairs of brothers.
Do you and Duncan sit down and begin to come up with a musical response to something that emotional?
Well, I suppose the best bit of advice we got right at the beginning of the process was to let the men who were on board that night tell the story. So people who have survived, we used their testimonies. There was a number three that kept coming back. So almost three generations gone in that 100 years. There was also the idea of the third wave, and that's what we called the piece, the third wave, in Tresuile. We named the piece in Tresuile after the actions of one man who was known as Ferraropa, John F. MacLeod, and he made the brave decision to try and take a hawser rope to shore. He really took a chance and he jumped into the water. He threw one boot ahead of him, and he, like everybody else on the board, many of them were serving in the R&R, so they were very experienced mariners, and he knew how to read the patterns of the waves. He knew the sea so well. He knew that the third wave is the strongest. They're known as in Gaelic as a clia, and the pattern of waves following that's known as fa. It's like the lull. And he watched the patterns of the waves, and he took the third wave, and that was the one that carried him to shore, because he knew, even if you were the best swimmer in the world, that night in those rough seas, the swimming wasn't going to take you there. So he let himself be thrust onto the shore by the third wave. He took the rope with him, and because of his actions, dozens and dozens were saved before the line eventually broke and went to the bottom of the sea with the Isle Eyre.
So when you performed this, did you perform it on the island?
We did. We performed it in Lewis.
It was incredibly emotional.
It was the single most emotional thing I've ever done in my life, really. Musically speaking, it was... at times, it was kind of harrowing, but there was something important about just being truthful and telling the story as it was. Usually when you approach a musical project, you're thinking about light and shade and tempos and moods. There wasn't any of that in this. It just had to be about the story, and as difficult and as harrowing and as challenging as it was at times, that's the way we had to do it.
What was the response?
The response at the end was pure silence. And that's, we've performed it four times now, and there's nothing like it, like sitting on the stage and finishing a piece and knowing that the people in the audience are looking at images and listening to stories of their own family, people who were lost, drowned, or perhaps survivors who struggled greatly with life thereafter. And at each of the end of the four performances, there have been an extended period of pure silence. Just a really special project, and one which is, it'll never leave me.
Mm. Let's keep moving.
Sounds amazing. Are you going to perform it again?
I must say that Julie and Eamon have gone to great lengths to help us out on Folk on Foot here, because Julie's just had to scrape the snow off a table here in order to place the harmonium which they brought with them to sing this next song. Let's just go a bit closer, because Julie, that's a wonderful instrument. It's got stops.
It has, yeah. It's
And do you pump it by bellows at the back?
It's a hand pump harmonium. So can you use one hand, the right hand for playing a few little, in my case, kind of simple chords, and then use the left hand for pushing the air through. So it has a.
So you can change the harmonics by pulling out the stops.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It's lovely.
Well, thank you for bringing it.
That's all right, now that we've got rid of the snow, most of the ice.
Nobody yet has had to scrape ice off a table to put that harmonium in place
this
on this podcast.
You're
really
podcasting.
Brilliant. No, I can tell you're a Highlander now, because nothing phases you.
No.
So what are you going to sing for us here?
Well, I was recently involved in a project called Spell Songs, The Lost Words Spell Songs, which is a musical project which sprung out of the amazing work by Jackie Morris and Robert McFarlane. The book itself, the writing and the images, the paintings are so, so inspiring. And the idea, for anybody who doesn't know about it, this book is really a celebration of all these words are being lost.
Words that have been taken out of the Children's English Dictionary,
yeah,
weren't they?
Yeah, they were. And Jackie has made these beautiful illustrations. And
we should say they're words like acorn and
they're really
adder.
To me, they're really important, essential words like acorn, like wren, raven, bluebell, otter, newt, things that are part of certainly my family's everyday life. And to lose them just seems like an absolute tragedy, to take them out of the dictionary, to be replaced by modern words like probably emoji and things like that. It's just awful, the thought of that. And I got this book for my children over a year ago, and they absolutely love it. It's a magical, magical book. And the musical project around it has been such a privilege to work with all the other musicians who are involved.
Who else is it?
So Chris Strever is involved, and Kareen Polwart, Rachel Newton. So we're the kind of the Scottish contingent. And there's Sekou Keita from Senegal, Kerry Andrew, who I know you've worked with, and Beth Porter, and Jim Molyneux, who I hadn't worked with before this project. And they're all incredible musicians. So we've just spent a week together, and we had only 1 week, to write an entire album of music from scratch, but based on the work, Jackie and Robert's work, and also just record it as well, which we managed to do.
So you did it from writing to recording the album in a week?
From nothing to an entire album and a concert set.
So what is the song that you have written and are going to perform for us now?
The song I'm going to play for you now is one that myself and Kareen put together one morning. I think it was like the second morning of our residency. And we sat down, and Robert's poems they're really amazing. His use of language is incredible. But the poems don't necessarily lend themselves to being songs immediately. So what we did was we took one of his poems, which is Snow Hair, and this is one of his newer spells or newer poems, and we tried to create a traditional form for that Snow Hair poem. And so we extracted some of the words and the messages from that, and then we melded it, I guess, into a traditional song.
Seems very appropriate to sing it standing here in the snow.
It does, actually. Perfect.
The hair turns white as the year turns black. Oh, the rain is falling. The hair turns white as the year turns black. Oh, the dark is rising. By the lough of the birds, he hunkers down in the heather. He waits for the veil of snow to come and cover him over. The snow here hides in the mountain moss. Oh, the sleet is falling. The snow here hides in the mountain. Hungers down in the heather. He longs for the veil of snow to come and cover him over. Here he waits on the highest hill, but the snow is no more falling. The here he waits on the highest hill, and oh, the dark rising. By the rock or the stack, he shelters in from the weather. He prays for the veil of snow to come and cover him over.
We talked a lot about Gaelic and about preserving the language and so on, but it must be quite hard to think about a music career in a language that a lot of people aren't going to understand. Were you ever tempted to think, well, I'll sing more in English?
Well, I suppose the thing for me was I'd never planned a career in music, so it wasn't really there wasn't an objective or an aim to be hugely successful or anything like that. I sang these songs because I really loved it. And
was there a moment when you decided to become a full-time musician?
There was a moment when I went full-time, and it happened because my mother took really ill. I had not long graduated. I'd done maybe a year and a half of my first ever full-time job. I was working as a music development officer, and I loved it, and I had no reason to want to do anything else. I was doing a few gigs on the side, but it was more to keep up with my musician friends and just to play and just for the enjoyment of it. But my mum took gravely ill in March 2002, and she spent a year in hospital.
What was the matter?
She developed a thing called Guillain-Barré syndrome. So she went from being fully healthy woman to being paralysed overnight from the neck down. And so it was a really traumatic year for us as a family. And it sent us all spinning in different directions, and we all reacted and coped in different ways. And I decided that I would quit my job, and I thought, well, I'll play music for a year. It will maybe give me a bit more time with my family, and also think that sharp realisation that life is very precious and very short and you only get one shot at it. I suppose I thought, well, maybe if I want to do anything wild and, you know, now when I've got no ties and, you know, now is the time to do it. So I plan to take a year out, play music, spend time with my family and focus on all of that, and then go back to normal, as it were, in a year's time. But I'm still here.
And how's your mum now?
She's great. She's doing really well. She walks with a walking frame now, and she's out of her wheelchair for a long time now. And I couldn't be any more proud of her, actually, and of my dad too, for coping with the way he handled the whole thing and kept everyone together. It was it's sort of a sad catalyst in a way for what I'm doing, but I think when you periods of difficulty make you stronger ultimately. And
so back to my question, did you ever think, well, my career would be better if I sang in English.
Yeah, and I think lots of people used to tell me that. When I started playing full-time, they used to say, you'll get played in the radio if you sing in English, or you'll get more gigs. And I think I quite stubbornly just ignored everybody and just stuck to... I thought, I'll just sing what I want to sing. And actually, I really strongly feel that you don't have to dumb music down. You know, you don't have to sing in any certain language to connect with people, you know, even without words at all, you can connect with people very strongly just through music. So I've always just kind of stubbornly stomped my own path. But the thing is, for me, I really like singing in English and in other languages too. The last album I sang in Galician, and regularly, you know, collaborate with people like Le Vent du Nord, singing in French and Quebecois, you know. So being a musician, one of the most magical things is sharing and learning from one another.
I think you've got one more song for us. Tell us about this.
Well, this is a song which I came across when I was leafing through the Transactions of the Gaelic Society of Inverness from the late 1800s, which is the kind of thing that I do. And I came across this poem, which was very clearly, to my mind, a song, because it has a refrain. And it was a really tragic story of a Highland family, and there are three siblings in this family. There's two sisters and a brother. One of the sisters passes away, and the brother decides to go to Ireland. And in the song, or the story to the song, the living sister, who's living in the Highlands of Scotland, she has this vision one night, and it's the sister who has passed who has come back to tell her that the brother has now joined her. So
sad.
Yeah, it's a really moving song, and it kind of tells a story in like such a heartbreaking way that only a Gaelic song can.
She lounges and throws.
I don't know about having a voice that charms the birds out of the trees, but you've just charmed a deer now to arrive. A red deer has come and walked in a very picturesque way across the snowscape behind you as you were singing
the
that song.
The ducks and the deer.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, it's been a joy to have this conversation with you, to hear your beautiful music. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Eamon, too, for coming to play with us and coming to talk to us. Julie Fowlis on the shores of Loch Ness. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode of Folk on Foot, please rate and review us so others can find us, and please tell all your friends. To keep up with the latest news, sign up for our newsletter at folkonfoot.com. Other episodes in Season 2 feature John Bowden in the Loxley Valley, Seth Lakeman on Dartmoor, Kerry Andrew or UR Wolf at the Brockwell Lido, Fisherman's Friends in Port Isaac, and Stick in the Wheel on the road to Epping Forest. And if you haven't caught up with Season 1 yet, what are you waiting for? 6 more episodes featuring the Young'uns, Kareen Polwart, Sam Lee, Eliza Carthy and family, Steve Knightley and Cara Dillon. All available right now at folkonfoot.com or through your podcast app. Do have a listen.